So the calendar may say it's fall, but who can really tell for sure given the weather? It's been many seasons this past week alone. So all the more reason to have Gerard Lordal here today. He's the greening director of Grow NYC, and he's here to help us get our plants ready for fall whenever it actually hits for real. Welcome back, Gerard.
Welcome. Nice to be here, Matt.
If you have any questions out there for Gerard, please call us now at 212-433-9692 or tweet us. We're at WNYC Midday. Gerard, you came bearing gifts today. You gave me a bag.
Yes, it's all about harvest. New York City community gardeners will be celebrating their harvest tomorrow at Green Thumbs Community Garden Harvest Fair in Brooklyn on Pacific Street. So any of your listeners want to join us, you could register with the biggest sunflower or the heaviest tomato or the most bountiful basket. It's going to be on Pacific Street right near Flatbush Avenue at the Brooklyn Bears Garden. And you could check the Green Thumb website at newyorkcity.gov, Green Thumb, and register for the Green Thumb Harvest Fair, which has been going on every year for about 30 years, which is great. At Grow NYC, we're also doing something interesting, which is a nice segue from your previous guest.
Yeah.
We are featuring plant breeders on Monday, September 24th, and they're going to be paired up with local chefs. And each breeder will create a new variety of vegetable, and then the chef will create a dish that highlights that new plant variety. And then if you're part of this, you could sample and taste what the chefs have made from the new varieties of vegetables. It's called Variety Showcase, and it's at our Project Farmhouse, just a block south of Union Square. And then if you go to Union Square that day also, there'll be some tasting interactive tables for the public from 11 in the morning till 6 o'clock. So it's all about harvest,
yes.
Scarecrows, harvesting your sunflowers, and getting ready for winter. So what I gave you were eight ball zucchinis. So there's lots of gourds. You could buy them at the green markets, or you could harvest them from many of the hundreds of community gardens around the city. I was recently at Governor's Island, where we have some beautiful butternut squash and shishito peppers and tomatoes, and everything's coming in. We're sharing it with food pantries. We're teaching kids about where their food comes from, and community gardeners are just kind of sitting back and enjoying the harvest and coming up with some great recipes.
Wonderful. Gerard, this is our last day at midday, WNYC, and we are having you on because we're having our favorite longtime guests on.
Such an honor to be here. Thank you.
How many years have you been a guest on the show?
Well, you know, when I spoke with Melissa, I brought a photograph of me 30, basically, years ago when I was here on the show. It's about 28 years. And it's interesting because looking back and chatting with Melissa, your producer, I first came on the show because of weather-related issues.
Huh.
It was 1989, and we were going through a drought with community gardeners, and a lot of the hydrants were locked, and we were losing a lot of edible plants, and because of the drought, you couldn't access water.
Hmm.
So there was a drought crisis at the time, and WNYC was smart enough to bring about 7 or 8 representatives of different environmental groups on the air to talk about what people can do in New York City and the 5 boroughs to deal with the drought condition. Today, we're dealing with an East Coast horrific hurricane,
mm-hmm.
and the weather is just crazy.
Right.
We had a very cool spring, and the season is somewhat delayed. So it's interesting that this is the last show, and
yes.
everything is, weather related when you're dealing with the garden.
Right.
And your listeners can buy all sorts of information about climate conscious gardeners. And this is provided by the Brooklyn Botanic Garden, which is great if you want to learn about things you can do in the garden to deal with climate change issues like, mulching, lasagna gardening, there's a lot you can do in the garden, but it's all weather related.
Right.
The crisis with our honeybees and insects, diseases that attack the farmer, the crops that farmers are growing, whether it's late blight of tomatoes or fusarium of London plain, it's all weather related. And there are things you can do to mitigate those
things. What can somebody do? What can you do?
Well, first of all, gardeners know we rely on our USDA hardiness zones, the map that divides the United States into basically 10 regions, depending on your weather. And the reason I'm bringing up the hardiness zone is because your listeners should be aware that you want to plant things that are native to this area that can deal with the climate. And over the last 10 or 15 years, they've seen a slight change in our zone rating. Mm-hmm. In other words, it's gotten warmer. So when we used to be zone 5 or 6, we're now, more closer to 6 and 7. Long Island hasn't changed much, but there are some small changes. And because we're in that hardiness zone 6 or 7, there are certain plants that can tolerate that temperature and others that cannot. For instance, we get a lot of calls from this radio show about figs. Mm-hmm. And just coming here today, I got an email about my figs are still green. Do I have enough time for them to turn brown? A lot of that has to do with the early cool season that we had. Tomatoes were delayed in ripening this year because of the very cool spring that we had. Untypically, we usually had warmed up before that. So there are things people can do: conserving water, mulching. These are things. So selecting plants that are hardy for your zone that will not need as much water.
How do you find out your zone?
So when you buy plant material or when you look up any kind of plant that you purchase at the nursery, it'll usually say hardy to zone 3.
Okay.
That means it'll withstand cold temperatures similar to upper Vermont, let's say.
Got it.
So, Florida can't grow apples and we can't sustain oranges because of the change in temperature. So when you select plants, you're selecting plants that will survive in the correct zone.
Which zone are we in?
We are in 6-7.
It
changes. But as I said, it was warming up a bit.
Sure.
In the boroughs, it's basically 6. Long Island is 7.
Okay.
And this is something to keep in mind. Varieties also. We mentioned this event that we're having, the Variety Showcase. Go with varieties that Cornell University, Rutgers University, Penn State, they test a lot of varieties of vegetables that are conducive more for the urban environment. September is a month for all the gardeners that are listening to sort of sit back and figure out what was successful in the garden. Take
right.
pictures of varieties or label or list the plant varieties that did really well. And every year, modify that list. If you saw things didn't do well, maybe try something else. Also, tomatoes or tomatoes, however you want to pronounce it, they shouldn't be planted in the same part of the garden year after year because there are often soil-borne diseases that could attack. So many good community gardeners and farmers will change the location for their crops, and they will not plant tomatoes in the same location or cabbage or kale. So those are some pointers. So look up climate change and things you can do in the garden, and you'd be surprised. Composting is very important, yep. Of course.
I think we have a caller with a question that might be related to some of this climate change issues when it relates to gardening. Let's go to Joan in Riverside, Connecticut. Hi there, Joan.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
I'm not sure if my problem is related to climate change or soil. I have hydrangeas. This is their second year that we've planted them, and they've blossomed beautifully. We finally conquered the deer problem. My question is, the flowers are green. Hmm. They're neither white nor pink nor blue. They're green. They're almost the same color as the leaf. And I would prefer that the hydrangeas have some color to them. I don't mind what color. Is there something I can do to the soil?
Yes. Hydrangeas are unique in that the color of their flower changes based on the alkalinity or the acidity of the soil. Mm. So you'll go into any garden center and you could buy acetone or plantone or any kind of acid-based fertilizer. Miracle-Gro is one, other as well. But any kind of acid-based fertilizer will often turn hydrangea flowers blue. I just want to caution the listeners, September is not the time to be fertilizing anything in the outdoor garden. You should stop fertilizing your roses because if you fertilize now, it's a little too late and you'll develop new growth that could get damaged in the winter. So I'm suggesting you do this in the spring for your hydrangea. It's probably a nutrient deficiency in the soil and you may need to add, as I said, some sulfur to make it turn blue in many cases, or also calcium or magnesium sulfate or lime, commonly known as lime, will often make hydrangeas turn pink. So those are two suggestions. The other possibility might be if you don't have enough sunshine, sometimes plants will not go into full color because of too much shade. So I would say it's probably nutrient deficiency.
Interesting. Gerard, for those apartment dwellers out there who might not necessarily have big gardens and deer problems like Joan from Connecticut, tell us about the public gardens in the city. I'm curious because you've been coming on our air for 28 years, and the gardens in the city must have changed so dramatically during that time.
Yeah, I came on the scene basically in 1980 after studying at college urban agriculture and horticulture, and there were like 16,000 publicly owned, city-owned, lots that people were gardening on who were living in apartments. Mm-hmm. And now there's very few publicly owned lots because all of these beautiful gardens have been worked on for like 30 years by volunteers in communities that wanted to improve their neighborhood, the Lower East Side, Central Brooklyn, Southern Bronx. So I'm really honored to have been part of this kind of metamorphosis, if you would, of New York City, where there was so much devastation in the 60s and 70s. And, then there was a time when we weren't sure there was going to be a new generation of urban gardeners in New York City because there wasn't a lot of interest from younger folks in the 80s and the 90s to work in the environmental field. Now, in 2018, everyone wants composting in their backyard. People are raising honeybees. They're raising chickens. There are waiting lists for community gardeners. In New York City, as well as in 25 of the cities across the country that I know of through the American Community Garden Association, people are taking on publicly owned land, and in some cases, privately owned land, and they're turning it into spaces where they could grow edible foods. In addition to that, many cities have their local farmers coming into the region and bringing urban dwellers, because I think half of our population live in cities now,
nationally,
if I understand
correctly,
nationally. So people in the urban areas, they want fresh produce. They want local seasonal produce. And this is where our green markets come in New York City. We have over 50 green markets. We teach kids about where their food comes from. But we also provide a living for the farmers who are in the outer areas of the tri-state area who depend on the urban dwellers to buy their produce, to keep their farms going. So this is something that's very important. In fact, I'm very proud at Grow NYC. Our executive director is working on a wholesale distribution center in the Bronx, and that'll be able to serve schools and larger institutions. So, it's all about food justice, and lots of different groups in the city deal with food justice and food security. But with these crazy weather patterns, we can no longer rely on food from across the country. So why not grow more of it locally and be food secure here in New York City?
And real quick, before we take a break, can you explain what you do, a greening director at Grow NYC? What does that mean?
Sure. My training is in horticulture and public service. So through Cornell University and Cooperative Extension and all these other groups. Grow NYC is a nonprofit environmental group that provides environmental solutions for New Yorkers based on food and the environment and making New York City a more livable city.
I'm speaking with Gerard Lordahl, Grow NYC Director, and we're taking your calls about preparing plants for fall. We'll be back with more after the news. Back on Midday on WNYC, I'm Matt Katz speaking with Gerard Lordahl, Greening Director of Grow NYC. And I want to have one point of clarification before we head to our next segment here. Somebody called in from Connecticut concerned that her hydrangeas were not turning colors other than green. Apparently, and Gerard rightly explained that it has to do with the soil, but we have learned since that there is also a green flowering hydrangea called the Limelight. Maybe that's the issue that was happening in Connecticut. Now we're moving on.
And that's what's so great about gardening with the public and community yes. information. People can share. There's such a plethora of knowledge out there yes. from experience. And, you know, it's just great to share all that with the community.
We have another call from the community. This is Katie in Jersey City. Hi there, Katie.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks for calling in. You're on with
great,
Gerard.
Thank you. Hi. So I have this little tiny backyard. I have a townhouse in Jersey City, and I have this little tiny backyard that has 2 30-foot black walnut trees in it. And so
wow.
I'm having trouble growing lots of things because of the black walnut toxicity. So mm-hmm. I wanted to know if you had any suggestions for plants that will handle black walnut toxicity. I have some hostas that have worked, some have not. I've got some periwinkle. Some is great, some is not. And I've got a couple of ferns that sort of survived the summer. So I'm just trying to think of, like, how can I prep for next year that I'll get a better backyard garden.
I'll have to say we don't have a lot of experience with black walnuts here in New York City, but I do know of the toxicity, and I do know that people will go with some of the more native shade-loving plants to plant underneath something like that, the black walnut. So you may want to think about auruncus or goat's beard as a possibility that tolerates the shade. We have some really shade-tolerant plants growing in McCarran Park under some large trees. They're not black walnuts, but turtle chalone is another one that does really well and flowers through the season. Monk's hood you might want to try. Or any of the shade-loving native plants, I would suggest as a way to try to deal with it. Your hostas, you know, are surviving. Your ferns, Christmas fern is one that does well in our public parks. As I said, we've had some good experience with that. And goat's beard, as I said earlier. So try those, and you may have some luck. Shade-tolerant, moist plants that will tolerate moist conditions and are native to your area, and you may have more luck.
Thanks for calling in, Katie. Let's take a call from Mary on Long Island. Mary, are you there?
I am. Hi.
Hi there. What's your question for Gerard?
I have a question about tomatoes. In the spring, my husband built 2 raised beds, and we filled them with compost, topsoil, and peat moss,
mm-hmm.
and tomatoes, nothing but tomatoes. So we had a great first couple of harvests, and then after all the rain, I think we got anthracnose in the tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, I can't rotate to another spot to plant tomatoes again because this is the only spot that we have.
Right.
So is there something we can do with the soil
for next year?
Change all the soil, or is there something we can do to be able to plant tomatoes in the same
yeah,
spot?
Yeah, you
next
mentioned
year?
Peat moss, and I just wanted to mention, you know, peat moss is a natural resource that has depleted, and a lot of very conservative gardeners in New York City are substituting compost for peat moss because of its depletion in the bogs. And it retains a huge amount of water and nutrients, which is why we like it. But maybe consider redoing the soil and adding a quarter of sand, that a coarse sand that might help loosen up that soil. And in the future, instead of using peat moss, you might want to consider some compost or humus to add to the soil. But that would be my suggestion. And try not planting tomatoes again in that bed. Plant something different from a different family of plants in that bed next year. It's very difficult to control anthracnose. London plane trees are...
Can you explain what anthracnose is?
Yeah, it's a physiological disease that attacks the water transport vessels simply up and down the plant, and it causes leaves and then stems of the plant to turn brown and wilt and die. Mm. And it's not just on tomatoes. It's on lots of other plants. So these are pests or fungi that attack the inside of these plants and are very difficult to control.
Good luck with your tomatoes, Mary. Thanks. Let's go to Paul in Queens. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Matt.
Thanks for calling in for Gerard. What's your question?
So, Gerard, I've had a thriving potted herb garden outside all summer, and I hate to just throw it out. Do I need to harvest it, or can I keep it alive over the winter inside?
So I would need to know, you know, whether they're perennial or annual. If they're perennials, you have a rootstock that could survive from year to year. And people often bring in, like, let's say, rosemary. It has, it's kind of soft hardy in a way. It won't stay outdoors in the harsh winter. But if you bring it indoors and cut it back before you bring it in, it could survive the winter. If you have stuff in pots, the freezing and thawing in the wintertime will just freeze the roots and kill things, which is why everything should either be brought indoors or planted in the ground and mulched to protect it over the winter. So if you have any of your perennial herbs, peppermint, rosemary, anything that has an overwintering, try to get them in the ground. That would be the best thing. If you cannot do that, then cut them back at the end of the season, which is like the end of September, which is best. It's recommended that you bring your outdoor plants indoors when you're still opening the windows and the temperature is about the same indoors and out. That will make the transition easier for the plant. So about the end of September, when it's about 70 degrees in and out, you could cut back your herbs and then bring them indoors. Remember, what you're bringing indoors in the soil is going to be in your home as well. So many people will repot. They will remove the plants, remove your rosemary or perennial herbs from the pot, and get some sterilized potting soil or any kind of media that you know doesn't have insects and disease in it, and repot it and put it on a windowsill indoors away from radiators and drafts. And it should get, you know, a couple of hours of sunlight on a windowsill. Reduce the amount of watering. Do not fertilize while it's surviving through the winter. And then you could resume planting it or putting it outside in the early spring again. But people do overwinter their herbs indoors.
Does this also go for the same philosophy go for my mums that are perennials, that they should not be in containers and they should be in the soil for the winter?
Yeah, anything your mums are going, and that's a good question. This is a time when your mums are setting bud, so you don't want to prune. You're pruning back a lot of stuff in the garden now in September, except for those things that are flowering in the spring, or else you'll prune off the flowers. But something like mums that flower in the fall, you want to continue feeding them. And if you get really long, lanky, woody stems on your mums, that's because you didn't prune them properly earlier in the year, and you should continue fertilizing them while they're flowering, mm-hmm. watering them as well. A lot of people let them dry out. So it's better if your mums can be in the ground, but a lot of us in the city can't do that. So sure. You're growing in containers. Make sure your containers containers are large enough to sustain the mums and keep the soil moist and keep them in a sunny area, and they'll bloom nicely for you. When the winter comes, if you can, before the winter comes, put them in the ground. They will continue to grow for you next year.
Very good. Thanks. Valerie in Cypress Hills. Hi there, Valerie.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great, thanks. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, so my question, I actually have a two-part question. So first off, my husband and I planted, we put down some sod in the middle of the summer, and it was going well for a little while, but we went away on vacation. We came back, and it's now very patchy and kind of half brown and dead, and some parts green and thriving, but other parts are like green and thinned out where it gets less sun.
Sure.
And I've heard that you can put down seed in the fall, but
yes.
I don't know exactly how you would do that. You just like,
okay,
over,
yeah.
Like what's a
okay,
well,
so I'm going to suggest that, you know, if you can, lawns and grass are so high maintenance and they take so much care and water. Think about adding not just grass seed, but maybe clover with your grass seed. Red clover is a really good fertilizer that looks nice. And if you're okay to the idea of having something other than grass, clover is a really nice plant that is nitrogen fixing, and it actually helps fertilize your lawn without bringing in any of those toxic chemicals and pesticides and things. So I'm saying, yes, remove the dead grass. This is the time to do it. You could start a new lawn in the end of September, but you have to keep the seeded area moist, and you cannot walk on it for several weeks while the seed germinates. Consider putting in a mixture of something like Kentucky bluegrass or ryegrass with clover. And as I said, the clover mixed with the grass seed will fertilize the grass and add this nitrogen-fixing bacteria, which will be good for your grass as well. You could add bone meal to the rest of the lawn area. Or organic matter like compost, and the grass will benefit from that as well. Lawn and seed in general likes a good moisture-holding soil with as deep soil as possible for your area. So I hope that helps. It should be in a fairly sunny area, and the seed will do better. But again, think about a more low-maintenance option like the red clover mixed with your Kentucky bluegrass, which is mostly what your sod is made of often.
Thanks, Valerie. We also have a question here from Kate in Montclair. She asks, when is the best time to replant a myrtle shrub?
Replanting myrtle. Okay, so myrtle shrub. I'm trying to think of what she's thinking about. So there's crepe myrtle. She might be thinking about that.
Uh-huh.
In general, you want to transplant.
Crepe myrtle it is, I'm
okay,
told.
It's
yes.
Crepe myrtle.
Yes.
So something like a crepe myrtle, you want to wait until the foliage starts to turn color, because that's an indication that it's going dormant. Mm. And that would be the best time to transplant it or move it when it's dormant. The issue is you don't want things to be transplanted and then not survive the winter.
Right.
That could be harmful. And for your listeners, magnolias, dogwoods, and birches are best to be delayed for planting because they often don't survive the winter. So wait until spring to plant something like magnolias, dogwoods, and birches. But for the rest of your plant material, fall is a good time to transplant. And if you get them in the ground, like in late September and things like that, any new plantings, they'll have enough time, like 45 days before we start to get snow, basically around the end of October, it could start to freeze in our area. So we have about 50 days left before the freezing temperature comes, and you want to establish any trees or shrubs or plants that you want to get in the ground.
Very good. Gerard, thank you very much for helping us prepare for fall.
It's been an honor, pleasure.
And just thank you for being a longtime friend of WNYC and for your 38-some-odd years of service to the Gardens of New York and for being our penultimate guest on
Well, that's
Midday.
Great. And, you know, the best thing is sharing the knowledge. And I thank WNYC for making Grow NYC available to the public in this way. And over the 30 years, we've had so many of your listeners thanking us for the information that we share through your radio show. So thanks to WNYC as well.
That's great to hear.
And if people want to contact us, it's grownyc.org on our website, and we could continue to share information.
Excellent. I'm Matt Katz, and I've been speaking with Gerard Lordell, the director of Grow NYC. Up next, Al and Larry Ubell, the gurus of how to answer your home repair questions. This is Midday on WNYC. We'll be right back after a break.